Hello, everybody. Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to the Vox Pop for Tuesday, May 30th. I'm Alan Chartier. President Trump recently finished his first official overseas trip. The president visited the Middle East and attended NATO and G7 summits. Here to discuss the Trump administration's foreign relations is Siena College Professor of Political Science Vera Carius Kelly. And we want to hear what you think of the administration's international diplomacy. Give us a call, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Your calls and more coming up on the Vox Pop right after this news. Hello again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WMC's live daily afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartock. President Trump recently finished his first official overseas trip. The president visited the Middle East and attended NATO and G7 summits. Trump called on the other 27 NATO countries to contribute more to NATO's common defense. In the studio, and we're lucky to have her to discuss foreign relations, is Siena College Professor of Political Science, Vera Carius Kelly. She holds a Master of Arts in Law and Diplomacy and International Relations from the Fletcher School at Tufts University, one of the best in the country, where she also earned a PhD in International Studies. Vera, welcome to the Vox Pop.
Thanks so much, Alan, for having me.
Well, you're terrific to be here. I want to ask you, first of all, I happen to know that you have a real specialty in international relations and in comparative politics, and you're interested in the Kurds. Tell me what you know.
So the Kurds are fascinating people because they have been struggling since the end of World War II, since the dissolution of the Ottoman Empire, for their own independent statehood. And we're in a really interesting moment right now because for the first time in a long time, the United States has expressed some support for Kurdish self-determination. We see improved relations with the Kurds in the KRG, which is in northern Iraq. And of course,
and the KRG is
the Kurdistan Regional Government, okay, which is the most northern part of Iraq. And then we have, for the first time, a relationship, at least a military alliance, with a Kurdish militia group in Rojava, which is western Syria, western Kurdistan in Syria, which is hated by the Turks, a NATO ally of the United States, but receives a lot of support now from the United States because we have a common goal, namely to defeat ISIS.
And because the Kurds are fierce fighters.
They are fierce and experienced fighters. Even the British had that experience in the 1920s when they encountered Kurdish fighters around Mosul, which is one of the big battlegrounds right now to dislodge ISIS groups from that particular part of a city in the KRG or northern Iraq, Kurdistan.
Have you spent much time with Kurds?
I have. Most of my research, however, is with Kurds in the diaspora in Western Europe because a lot of Kurds had to leave parts of southwestern and southern Turkish provinces to go and appeal for asylum. The Turkish government has been ferociously opposed to any expressions of nationalism among Kurds. And so I grew up in Germany, in the city of Düsseldorf, and some of my schoolmates were Kurds, and their fathers had fought for Kurdish independence, had been in prisons and tortured. And so as a child growing up in Germany, I encountered all these Kurdish protesters, and I was fascinated by their struggle for recognition and human rights.
Wow. Okay, so Trump goes to the Middle East, he goes to Europe. How did he do?
Well, I think it was a very mixed bag. Maybe from a U.S. perspective, it looks like he survived his first international trip okay. But as a German citizen, I must say, I don't think he came across as very convincing because his foreign policy agenda seems muddled, unclear, and he did not strengthen the traditional alliance that has existed, the transatlantic alliance between Europeans and the United States. Instead, he seems to have felt more comfortable in Saudi Arabia, where, you know, a monarchy, the most repressive regime in the Middle East, actually, in terms of its treatment of women and minorities and its own populations, and a sponsor of Wahhabi Islam, which is the most repressive version of Islam. He seems to feel quite comfortable with families, clan-like families that rule a country, and he felt less comfortable with democratic leaders he encountered in Europe. So for Europeans, this was a bit of a shock in terms of his inability to express a sentiment of solidarity or understanding of what Europe stands for, what values Europeans often support. There was a bit of a gap, and now we see the fallout from that.
Now, Mrs. Merkel, right?
Yes,
was in fact outspoken yesterday, I guess, mm-hmm. in which she made it clear, basically, that they were on different pages. Now, the German people, let me get this straight: the German people, when polled, hate Trump's guts. Is that right?
Yes, I mean, his support among Germans is so low. I think last I looked at German polls stated that 17% of the German population understood what he wanted to achieve or liked him.
So fascinating, because Mrs. Merkel makes it clear that she is unhappy with him and that they're going to have to go it alone. What does that mean?
I think it's a really interesting moment for Chancellor Merkel. Her election, or a federal election, is coming up in September. So half of what she says is directly meant for the German population. She wants to have a convincing win in this election.
Will she get it?
Likely, yeah. Because her opponents are not as strong. Martin Schulz has spent a decade or more in Brussels, and he's not, from the Social Democrats, he's not as well known among Germans. And Germans get very nervous when changes take place, dramatic changes take place.
Because? History.
I think it's history, and also the German population tends to be a little bit older on average. And so there's a lot of memory in terms of what happened in the past. And also Germans like a steady, evolutionary change. They don't like dramatic, rapid shifts.
So when she takes Trump on, mm-hmm. It helps her with her base electorate.
Yes, it does. And it also convinces perhaps some of the supporters of the Free Democrats, the Liberals, and, the Green Party to support her. So I suspect she'll be reelected.
So I've always had a lot of admiration for her, but I have more now than I've ever had. What she did with the refugees, the Syrians, mm-hmm. and coming in mm-hmm. the country as a million? Did she take a million?
Yes.
In this country, it's extraordinary. And I believe, if I remember it correctly, that maybe obliquely, but she did talk about the special responsibility the Germans had to let those folks into the country. I think the hint was based on history.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. She feels very strongly that Germany carries a special responsibility because of its horrific past during World War II. The Holocaust, the killing of Roma and Sinti and disabled people, and a variety of other communities that suffered so greatly. She also feels a responsibility because she grew up in East Germany under a repressive
Indeed.
Regime. So for her, what Europe stands for is a principled defense of human rights. And that might also be why she feels a little uneasy around President Trump, who has been so harshly dismissive of refugees.
So she's got guts.
She does. And she wants to leave a legacy.
That's wonderful. We are talking to Professor of Political Science Vera Acarius Kelly, And I am so pleased that you're here with us today because your breadth of knowledge is so great. Ladies and gentlemen, if you want to talk to Vera, the telephone number is 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. We're going to take a short break and we'll be right back.
Support for WMC comes from the New York State Bar Association's Lawyer Referral and Information Services, offering assistance via a new website, nysba.org/lawyer-referral. Blue Sky Bicycles, Saratoga Springs, New York, now offering electric bikes to the Capital Region, featuring pedal assist bikes with test rides available, blueskybicycles.com. Kent Hicks Construction, specializing in deep energy retrofits, passive house, zero energy homes, and historic restorations, serving Western Massachusetts for over 25 years. KentHicksConstruction.com. Poughkeepsie Farm Project, working to connect food, farm, and community. Organically grown CSA shares now available for the 2017 season. FarmProject.org. And the Lake George Association, presenting The Floating Classroom Wednesdays in July and August, exploring ecology, history, and protections for the lake. LakeGeorgeAssociation.org/floating-classroom.
We're back. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. I don't know that Americans have a lot of interest in international relations, but they should. We are really up against it right now. We have a president who is ticking off international leaders all over the world. And if you call right now, I can guarantee you that the first person who calls gets to talk. So 1-800-348-2551. What's public radio like in the rest of the world, Vera?
Well, I think one of the things that really matter is in democracies, for people to be able to express their views and perspectives and share their experiences. And I think public radio matters. And just going back to the Kurdish issue, Kurds were never allowed to have their own media, and they had to go abroad to Europe to establish their own media outlets. But now they have, you know, the regional government of Kurdistan in northern Iraq, and that's where they also have their own radio shows and call-in shows and satellite TV channels. So public media matter. They make a huge difference for expressions of public views and experiences. So I'm glad to be here, and I think international relations is not the only thing that matters. It's also the economy, because the economy is also international relations. So perhaps some of your callers have a question about
we have
that.
In fact, I don't know what I said, but the phones have lit up. Okay, we'll get as many as possible. Okay, first up is Jeffrey. All right, Jeffrey, you're on. Okay, Jeffrey, go.
Hi, how are you? I'm just wondering what you think is going to happen with the Kurds as far as statehood, and if all of the different factions and different nation states are gonna merge to become a state somehow, or what you think is going to happen with that, and also I'm curious what you think should happen. And that's all. I'd just like to listen to your answer on that.
Great, thank you, Jeffrey. Great question, because number one, I think it doesn't matter what you or I think of what should be happening, because I think part of the democratic experience is to allow Kurdish people to pursue their own goals. So if Kurds in areas of Turkish Kurdistan want something else than from what Kurds want in the Kurdish regional government of Iraq, then that's okay. So I don't think at this moment we can expect statehood anywhere. I think it's right. A very difficult issue. I think the United States is not terribly inclined to support independent statehood in the northern part of Iraq, even though, of course, the leadership agitates around that goal. The sort of autonomous region in Syria is also pursuing, the Kurds are there pursuing their own statehood. We'll see if negotiations over Syria and the war, this ongoing horrific war, lead to anything. Right now, I think the Kurds are positioned to pursue incremental improvements.
Do they get anything for helping us?
Well, that's a really good question. There's a lot of debate amongst Kurds whether they can trust the American military and the Trump administration, because for the first time they're getting heavier weapons to fight against ISIS. But they're wondering, once ISIS is defeated, what will happen next?
Mm-hmm.
And Kurds are extremely concerned.
Jeffrey, thank you. Appreciate it. All
right. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
We'll go to Brian in Malta. Brian in Malta, you're on. Hey, Brian.
Hi. How are you doing?
Good.
How are you doing, Andrew?
My question is about the balance that needs to be struck with German diplomacy when we talk about the Palestinians and Israel. You noted earlier how Angela Merkel, Chancellor Merkel, feels a sense of, maybe not responsibility, but wants to ensure that the Israeli German relationship is a strong one, but also at the same time talking about human rights and how Germany has such a strong record on human rights. How do they strike that balance between the Palestinians and the Israelis?
Brian, really good question, and very difficult to answer because there are many, many different views on that. Germany as a state, of course, has a very important balance to strike. The population in Germany is concerned about the treatment of Palestinians, and Germans often criticize, especially NGOs and human rights networks, criticize the treatment of Palestinians in Israel. At the same time, Angela Merkel and the conservatives are cautiously challenging Israel to reflect on what many would call on the sort of harder left as an apartheid regime towards the Palestinians. Europeans in general are hoping that perhaps the Trump administration can make some progress as it has promised. And so there is cautious optimism that this administration will pursue encouragement in terms of negotiating out of the conflict.
Do you agree with that? I mean, do you think that it's really possible he can deliver something?
Realistically, I don't think so, because it's a very entrenched problem and neither party seems to be entirely ready to return to the negotiation table at this point.
Yeah, looks that way to me too.
Yeah.
Okay, Brian, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. All right. Now we're going to go, and 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. We move along fast here, folks, get your call in now. Let's go to Rick in Warren, Massachusetts. All right, Rick, you're on.
Hi, good afternoon. This is really multifaceted. I could ask the same question in five different directions, how it reflects on Trump, how it reflects globally. But Erdogan's forces, security forces, recently assaulted Kurds and Armenians on American soil. And although a couple murmurs were heard from Congress, it's very difficult to find anything as far as anger reflected by Congress or any other global group speaking out against Erdogan's attack on these people. I was wondering what your thoughts were, because he was present at the time, by the way, from what I've seen in videos.
Yes, indeed. You're absolutely right to say it was an outrage when President Erdogan was in D.C. and he sent his bodyguard goons after American citizens who were protesting. And they have a right to protest. This is a country where you actually have the ability to stand and hold signs and express your opposition. He doesn't seem to understand that because in Turkey, opposition figures are constantly arrested, intimidated, beaten, and put into prisons. As a matter of fact, today another Kurdish leader was arrested and imprisoned. This is typical conduct for the Erdogan government, and it is shocking indeed that there was not more outrage expressed in Congress and among public figures about the treatment of Armenian Americans and Kurdish and Turkish Americans.
Does this reflect on a permissiveness through the psychological permissiveness of some sort from Trump being president, or is this just Erdogan, just his whole attitude about I'll just stomp on whoever I feel I want to?
Well, what's interesting is that he does it every country he goes to and he visits. And we don't, in democracies, we don't seem to learn that a bully will behave like a bully. And his people have never gotten themselves in trouble. In Argentina last year, I think it was, they beat up a bunch of women. They were holding up signs to protest the poor human rights conditions in Turkey. Nothing happened. And he just flies them in, flies them out, and that's the way he operates.
Oh, wow.
I would have thought the Capitol Police would have been a little better prepared, but maybe they just didn't realize that's standard behavior for him and his people. So he does it everywhere he goes. He gets away with it. He is a repressor. And, you know, President Trump, unfortunately, was the first and only, leader of a democratic country to call Erdogan after his recent supposed win in the constitutional referendum, where we know we had stuffed ballot boxes, and it was completely irregular, and apparently President Trump did not pay close attention and called Erdogan to congratulate him. So, what I can say is there apparently is a misjudgment of what President Erdogan is up to, how he behaves, and that needs to be addressed.
Thank you, Rick. Okay, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. We go to Ashley in Sunderland. Ashley, you're on.
Hello. I would very much like the guest's comments about international balance of power changes, especially since Trump won the election. Just to give a few specifics, but I'm eager to hear her thoughts too. It seems to me, at least, that China is seizing opportunities to become the world leader in trade, and that possibly authoritarian leaders like Erdogan, Duterte, and Saudi princes and so forth are getting a little boost from the new regime here. And also that Merkel and maybe even the new Macron are assuming or seeming to assume the free world, leader of the free world status. So I'd love to hear more on these subjects.
Ashley, thank you very much. Very observant in terms of your comments on Merkel and Macron. You're absolutely right. The two of them get along. They are hammering out a plan to strengthen the European Union through reform. The European Union has never been as popular among German voters as right now because President Trump seems to be so dismissive of the organization and the structure and the transatlantic relationship. And it is clear that both Macron and Merkel are trying to fill this vacuum of leadership in the Western world. So if the Americans or the Trump administration doesn't want to fill that leadership role, it will be filled by Angela Merkel and Macron.
So more and more we are hearing about the Russian influence on the Trump group. And more the ball of twine, as I keep saying, keeps, straying out. It could well be that Trump has some kind of an arrangement with the Russians that leads him to bust up NATO, which is what the Russians want.
Well, the Europeans have said for a long time that the Russian use media outlets to manipulate electoral outcomes. They have tried in a number of countries, including in the Netherlands. Most recently, of course, in France, Macron, in his meeting yesterday with President Putin, mentioned the fact that RT, the Russian outlet, is a propaganda channel.
Is it?
Well, it seems it has at least some relationship with people that have a lot of money and are linked to the Kremlin. So,
because the pro-press people at any cost seem to be lifting their eyebrows at those remarks.
Well, I mean, let's just wait and see what the investigations here in the U.S. say, but the Europeans are convinced.
Yeah. Ashley, great question. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Now we're going to go to Ross in New Windsor. Ross in New Windsor, you're there.
Yes, good afternoon, Alan and Vera. I'm a former political scientist, so it's nice talking with kindred spirits.
How do you stop being a political scientist?
Yes, you indeed. Always are,
well,
and will
I
be.
I don't, but
it's like a Marine.
I just don't get a paycheck anymore. Oh. Yes, right. The thing has been said of Donald Trump that he's a disruptive force in American politics. And I think it's often being used as a kind of a positive characterization, or at least not a negative, if not true positive characterization of it. And when I think of a disruptive force in American business, I can think of somebody such as Elon Musk and Tesla. But when it comes to Donald Trump, for me, it doesn't make sense to call him a disruptive force because he seems merely chaotic. It seems to me a disruptive force would be one that has intentionality and that has some sort of, you know, forward-looking goal, surely. Trumpians will say, well, he wants to make America wealthier again, and that'll be a metric by which to judge him, I guess. But I'm just curious if you've heard that description and if you think that it's intended to be a positive description, as it might be if it's attached to Musk. If you can help me make sense of it.
So what we're talking about here, Ross, is the difference between being a disruptor and a chaoticer. Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, I think so, but wrong. Maybe there's something more redeeming about him.
So in other words, let me just set this up for a minute. If in fact it turns out, after all of the investigations of Mueller and everybody else, and somebody sings, you know, like Flint or some Flynn, one of those guys, that it turns out that the Russians were basically pulling the strings on Trump and that he had something to gain, they gave him money, they gave him financing, they gave him this and that, would that be a disruptor or a chaoticer?
Well, then he's no longer intentional of his own, really. So I would think at least a chaoticer.
Okay. Professor?
Well, I think the Trump administration is beyond disruptive. Because if you want to disrupt the economy, you also have to create something new. You mentioned Elon Musk. Now, he's innovative, creative, unconventional. He uses science in new ways. Trump does not. What he said to Angela Merkel, for example, in response to her, you know, sort of comments that it was now time for the Europeans to more rely on themselves rather than on the United States, was a comment about how Germans sell too many cars in the United States. And what that showed the world was he does not understand that Germany produces those cars in large part in the United States. In other words, there are massive numbers of jobs related.
Does he care about that? I mean, does he care about the truth? No, he just wants to inflame the base.
Perhaps, but he also might not understand how international trade works. If you want to put a 35% import tax on German cars, let's say, don't you think there'll be a repercussion in terms of American products exported to Europe?
Sure.
So the back and forth, he doesn't seem to understand. He seems to just think that if you shock and disrupt or create chaos, then automatically things will work out. But he comes from a business background where he has one partner across the table. Instead, what he faces is multinational negotiations, many confusing, complex issues, and he doesn't seem to have a complete understanding of what all the elements are that are part of deals. at least in the international relations world. So for me, he's not a disruptor in that sense, because then I would give him credit for trying to rebuild something new. But instead, he destroys, he creates chaos, and he establishes alliances with possibly enemy states, or states that are not sharing our common democratic interests.
Hey, Ross, I'm so sorry. We got to go for the break, but I want to thank you for the very good question. Thanks again, Ross. Appreciate it.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
Well, Jim is on the phone and Matthew's on the phone. We'll be right back in seconds, and I mean seconds.
Support for WAMC comes from Whitney's Farm Market and Country Gardens, Cheshire, Massachusetts, featuring garden supplies, organic fertilizers, mulch, cold hardy annuals and perennials, pansies, flowering trees, shrubs, and hanging baskets. Whitney'sFarm.com. Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany. Dr. Tom Denham, providing individual career guidance, career testing, job strategies, interview preparation, LinkedIn lessons, resume and cover letter writing. CareersInTransitionLLC.com. Saratoga Chamber Players, bringing musicians together from Europe, Asia, Canada, and the U.S. since 1987 with a string quartet concert June 11th at 3 p.m. at the Hyde Collection, Glens Falls. SaratogaChamberPlayers.org. And Viva Fresh Pasta, 30 years and 30 wines by the glass, European cuisine infused with flavors of the world, Northampton, Massachusetts. Grab life by the knife and fork, VivaFreshPasta.com. And Colby Attorney Service, corporate formations, document retrieval services, court filings, and legal publishing for the legal and professional community since 1939, ColbyService.com.
And we are back, and what a great program we have today. We have Professor of Political Science Vera Karius-Kelly, and she is quite an expert, and it's just so interesting and wonderful to hear you, Vera. Okay, so let's go on. We've got a Jim in Albany. All right, Jim in Albany, you're on.
Hey, Ellen, how are you today?
It's pretty good. Go ahead.
Good. Hey, Professor Kelly, thanks for being on the program. I'd like to get your ideas on Eleanor Roosevelt and her work with the United Nations Committee on Human Rights, and see what you think, and maybe she was a big inspiration for Angela Merkel?
Huh. Very interesting question. I think Angela Merkel is conscious of a lot of women that have walked before her. She had a very difficult upbringing. She was the daughter of Protestant ministers, and her father was deeply repressed in East Germany, and she grew up with parents who protested against human rights offenses. And so she pursued a PhD in physics because it was one way in East Germany as a woman from a political background to rise without being denied access to the university.
Wow, I had no idea she was in physics.
Yeah, so she's a smart scientist. She's very aware, well-read, and absolutely inspired to become a woman chancellor in Germany with a legacy. And for her, it matters. I mean, she took a stand against a lot of popular opinion to allow refugees into Germany, which was a difficult choice to make. But she decided it was the right choice to make.
I was sure she was going to get her head handed to her, but she hasn't.
She hasn't, because she's very, she's good at reading at what happens in the country, and she has experienced rocky times before. She was mentored by Helmut Kohl, a very famous German chancellor, very powerful. And Helmut Kohl left the legacy of having unified Germany. Now, she wants to leave the legacy of having helped the European Union survive. And part of that is to stand up for human rights values such as equal rights for men and women, considering the poor and marginalized. So in many ways, she wants to be, I mean, we often talk about men wanting to be in history books, but I think Angela Merkel also wants to be in the history books and remembered for her leadership.
Now, Vera, when we were talking about this morning on the roundtable, and I got a letter saying, yeah, don't be too strong on her because she really screwed over the Greeks, you know, in terms of being tough on them, in terms of paying back their debts.
Oh, well.
Somewhere there's a question in there.
I think, you know, there are mixed opinions on that as well. And I think I do agree that the Greek people have suffered horrendously. And she was very heavy-handed for a period of time. But I would say the Greek leadership should also take some responsibility for that. But of course, German banks did benefit from this whole situation with the crisis in Greece. So, mm-hmm. Yes, a very controversial subject. And I do feel the pain of sort of not the elite Greeks, but the regular population in Greece.
Sure, you're exactly right. Thank you, Jim.
Hey, thank you very much. Good to hear your views.
Thank you.
Yep. Okay, so now we are, and by the way, 1-800-348-2551. We'll go to Matthew in Scotia. All right, Matthew, your turn.
Good afternoon, professors. Thank you so much for bringing some truth and discernment to these issues.
Great.
Hey, I had so many of these issues are connected, and I'm a student of international relations myself, but I really appreciate hearing this. So, I remember when Trump was elected, my initial thought was that within, you know, the length of his tenure, this narrative that we hear in America and American public schools about, you know, America being the most dominant economic and military power in the world is going to be over by the time this presidency is over, and things are certainly becoming more clear. Angela Merkel made a statement following Trump's tour of Europe there, speaking on India as a reliable trade partner, and that is certainly as opposed to the U.S., which may not be a reliable trade partner anymore. My initial question was, do you know, that seem accurate to you?
Well, I think a lot of posturing is taking place right now because President Trump sort of tried to send a message in Europe. Angela Merkel is speaking to her own population to make sure she's reelected. Macron wants to establish his own foreign policy. Everybody has, you know, we have, when you look at Britain, you know, Theresa May has her snap election coming up June 8th, I think it is. So coming up very soon. So everybody is sort of talking to various subgroups and electorates and posturing. So in other words, is we have not seen a unified foreign policy or economic policy from the Trump administration. So we're not quite clear where it's all going. There seems to be a lot of sort of innuendo threats, change of direction. But really, I think the Europeans are prepared to say, listen, if the Americans don't want to be our reliable partners, we're ready to move into a new direction. And certainly China will play a part. India will play a part. European Union, the core of the European Union countries will come together and reimagine
NATO
themselves. Absolutely, NATO as well. You know, I mean, there's so many things that are in flux. We don't really know what's happening. We just know that when President Trump went to Europe, he created chaos. And now the Europeans are figuring out how to put a puzzle back together that may not be the same, may not look in the end the same way as we had it before. So it's difficult to say, but change is taking place. And certainly the United States does not seem like its old, reliable self as in the last sort of 50, 60 years.
Matt, thank you very much for your call. 1-800-348-2551. We will now go to, James in Saratoga. Okay, James, you're on.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure, go ahead.
Quick call about, it's kind of a two-part question about North Korea. My question is, first of all, you know, North Korea has been desperately trying to demonstrate or develop technology, intercontinental ballistic missiles, so that they can prove that they're a threat to us. And in my opinion, I think that, you know, eventually, it's not a matter of if, it's just a matter of when, they have that technology. What does that buy them in the end? I mean, when they do demonstrate that they have that technology, that they could deliver a nuclear weapon to the United States, what does that buy them politically around the world, number one? And number two, what is the world's reaction? Obviously, it's an unstable regime. What happens when they do demonstrate that they have that? Is, are we all going to go to war, in your opinion? I mean, what's the end game there?
And to put it is it possible that North Korea will be Trump's Reichstag fire? In other words, the thing that he hides behind and then uses to assume other powers.
Well, all I can say is that it's very difficult to read North Korea. While it is not my area of expertise, what I would say is North Korea is looking for respect within the international community. What they want is to be negotiating with perhaps the United States or a power in the world. They want to have a fairly reliable relationship with China, and they seem to not be able to achieve any of their goals unless they rely on the intercontinental ballistic missile.
Would they fire one with a nuclear warhead on it?
Well, my guess is once they fire, they have decided they are sacrificing most of the Korean Peninsula's population. So one never knows, but I doubt it because I'm not seeing the advantage at this point. What I think is they do a lot of threatening. They take U.S. citizens as prisoners to negotiate. You know, North Korea is misbehaving to try to figure out, can they get President Trump to sit down and speak with them?
We're running out of time. Thank you very much, James. Let's go to Mark in Glenville. All right, Mark, you're on.
Professor, I've enjoyed your conversation. You made a point earlier about Mr. Trump's knowledge or lack thereof in foreign trade, and I tend very much to agree with you on that. But I'll make a more direct point. Most Americans have no knowledge of foreign trade and believe that Mercedes are all made in Germany and Toyotas are all made in Japan, et cetera, et cetera. And until we are able to reach those people, they will continue to believe that, and they will continue to vote financially in a manner that flogs themselves, believing that they are, in fact, benefiting themselves.
Well, let me add on to that one, Vera, if I may. The idea that he picks a piece of truth out of the whole mess. And truth is, we're not doing very well when it comes to the balance of trade. So he says that, and then everybody believes all the rest of the stuff that he's telling us.
Yeah, I mean, I do think you're right. It's a struggle in my classes, in my regular conversations, in terms of how to explain why foreign relations and foreign trade matters and how it works. I deal with it all the time. And I think one of the ways through which I hope in this country we will learn a little bit more about trade is the coal question, because there has been a promise.
I deal with small business owners, a number of them, and I would say of the balance, a good 3 out of 4 are very happy voters for Mr. Trump. Mm-hmm. These are not people who are not hardworking. These are not people who have not spent a lot of time in their various businesses building them up, but they actually believe what Mr. Trump is saying in large part about foreign trade. Yeah. And they actually believe that those policies, breaking away from TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, perhaps pulling out of the Paris Accords, any other type of thing, going backing the UK, pulling out of the EU, that's going to somehow benefit them. They don't know quite how. They just like what they're hearing.
Yeah.
And until we're able to explain to people that, you know, it ain't all perfect, but you're a lot better off going this route than you are going with what he's offering.
Right. Okay, now what would Avira go?
So, yeah, I mean, I agree with you. This is a huge challenge. And what has to happen is to allow small business owners to actually experience the outcome of a Trump policy. Part of that will be some policy that's coming up related to a disruption of an international agreement. And we'll see how this affects the economy. I understand your challenge. I struggle with it all the time to explain to my students why this matters. But people have to take an interest, and they only will take an interest in understanding international trade once it affects their pocketbook. And unfortunately, we're not there yet.
Thank you, Mark. Okay. Let's go to Ivan in Loudonville. All right, Ivan in Loudonville, you're on.
Hello. Thank you very much for a very fine program today. I am a Hungarian Holocaust survivor, and I'm very concerned with the current Viktor Orban regime in Hungary and contrast that greatly to Angela Merkel's policies in Germany. Can you comment on that?
I can. I would say Viktor Orban is a dictator in terms of his way of thinking and looking at the future. Thankfully, we see protests in Hungary. We see pushback against his attempt and his right-wing party to close down the Central European University, for example, a fine institution, a premier institution of higher learning. But this Orban government is a menace to human rights, minority rights, religious freedom, and the antithesis to what Angela Merkel stands for. And so I hope this regime is not for long.
Ivan, I got to let you go only because we got one more person on the line I got to get to, and then we got to end the show. Thank you very much, Ivan.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, we'll go to Vincent in Kingston. Okay, Vincent.
Good afternoon. How are you?
We're good, but we only have 2 minutes, so good. Wrap it up.
All right, very quickly. What is apparent to me is that Donald Trump's lack of understanding of what leadership is all about. I mean, Donald Trump's previous life as high-stakes real estate developer, it was a zero-sum game. In other words, in Donald Trump's world, in order for someone to win, others have to lose. But as leader of the free world, or as leader of a great country, leadership is about bringing people together and ensuring that the maximum number of people win and creating win-win scenarios. And I think that's something that is really sadly lacking in its comprehension.
Okay, Vera, you got 1 minute to answer.
Okay, I agree with you, Vincent. What President Trump represents is transactional leadership. He wants to get a deal done with one partner and sign a contract and finish the job. That's not how international relations works. As a president, he must represent a wide diversity of views and perspectives, and he has to inspire. He has to inspire people to pursue higher goals, to achieve a common good. And unfortunately, because of his business background and his lack of experience in the international arena outside of the real estate business, he has no understanding of inspirational leadership.
Vincent, thanks for the call. We are basically out of time. I want to thank everyone who called in today. Boy, you were terrific. And I know that Professor Icarius Kelly of Siena College was impressed with the level of calls. Support for the Vox Pop comes from Gazebo, Northampton, Massachusetts, an independent lingerie shop specializing in bra and post-mastectomy fittings, providing support to the Pioneer Valley for almost 40 years. The-gazebo.com. The Wild Center, Tupper Lake, New York, now presenting The Wild Walk, an aerial pathway providing scenic views and nature experiences. Wildcenter.org for details. Coldham and Hartman Architects, serving residential and institutional clients with architecture designed for resilience and renewability, designed for the next 100 years, cnharchitects.com, Windy Hollow Veterinary Clinic, Montague, Massachusetts, conventional and integrative veterinary medicine, including acupuncture, comprehensive pet care and health services since 1998, windyhollowvet.com. Thanks again, everybody, for joining us on the Vox Pop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. No one better. Your calls were answered by Susie Cheka. She's terrific. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Alan Chartok. Stay tuned now for a news update.